the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
We're getting a better sense of the size of the South African crypto market and its unstoppable growth. This shouldn't come as a surprise, since blockchain technology provides massive amounts of data on transactions and on changing crypto habits and trends. Well, one company that keeps track of all this is Silver Sixpence and its blockchain intelligence engine by the name of Ledger Core. We're joined now by Carel de Jager, co-founder of Silver Sixpence, to take a reading on the South African crypto market. Hi, Carel. Thanks, as always, for your time. Tell us a bit about Ledger Core. What made you start to develop this? And I guess most importantly, what does it tell us about the scale of the South African crypto market?
Hey, Kieran, nice to be back. Thank you. So Ledger Core is our flagship product that we've built at Sixpence. I mean, it's been coming on for many, many years. Originally, it was actually just a product that was built out of necessity. It started off as a proof of reserves engine, where we did proof of reserves at our stations in partnership with some of the biggest auditors in South Africa on Binance and KuCoin and Crypto.com. And then it went through a period of funding by Coinbase, because Coinbase saw what we were doing. And it basically turned out into this highly sophisticated engine that monitors every single transaction that happens across the world on every single blockchain and on every single exchange, as well as a bunch of other things as well. So it's a huge, huge, huge amount of data. We're talking, you know, hundreds of transactions every second globally that we monitor. And then we extract all kinds of insights from that. First, we turn that data into financial data. It looks, you know, make it look like debits and credits. And then we look for criminal activity that might be happening on that day, you know, through across the world. We tie identities to it, so we know exactly who the sender and the receiver is. So we have de-anonymized a massive chunk of the global blockchain activity, etc. So we have all of these insights into a highly sophisticated engine. Now it's in a state where we can just derive lots of interesting insights out of that. So some of the interesting insights, for instance, that we've now gotten from out of that, recently we zoomed into South Africa, by the way, because we're working on a couple of things here in South Africa with some of the institutions and the regulators this side to gain a better grip on where South Africa's crypto market and the activity is. And some of the things that we've realized is that for the last, let's just limit it to the last 5 years, we've seen a massive spike in crypto activity around 2021, just as we're in the midst of lockdowns. And crypto activity, the total volume traded across all South African exchanges, actually reached a high of 500 billion rand. Now, if you take that into context of our economy, that is like double percentage points of our 2021 GDP, right? So it was absolutely massive at the time. Since then, it's plateaued a little bit. And we'll get into the reasons of why that might be and what we see in the data. But really, you know, what we're talking about is truly systemic in many ways. It's 500 billion rands of exchange activity, people just trading Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies for their czar. And then we also see massive on-chain volume. So we're seeing around about north of 100 billion rands a year being traded or being sent offshore into and out of South African borders, across our borders. And there's a massive net outflow as well. So if you take the amount of crypto that comes into South Africa and you deduct the amount of crypto that goes out of South Africa, or the other way around, then you see that there's a massive net outflow. It's a few billion rands per year that's actually leaving the country. That goes largely unmonitored up until this point, right? So, and I think going forward into the near future as well, it goes largely unmonitored by the regulators. And if you think about it, if several billions of rands or South African capital crosses our border into other jurisdictions, and that is not really monitored, what the effects are on variables like, for instance, the South African rand. So, and of course, we also know that South Africa has exchange controls. So that means that any individual or any entity in South Africa is only allowed to send up to a maximum of 11 million rand out of South Africa across our borders. That also is dependent on South African Reserve Bank approval. And if you do get that approval, then you're allowed to send that amount out. And we are seeing much, much, much more than that. Actually, gross violations of the exchange control legislation in South Africa using crypto. So you could argue that at least to some point, crypto wasn't really regarded as a financial product. But since the regulations have changed recently and the Financial Sector Conduct Authority declared it a financial product and all crypto companies be registered as financial service providers, that is definitely not up for consideration anymore. And crypto users should actually take note of that. They are already trading on thin waters if they are violating those legislations with cryptocurrency.
Okay, so you talked about there's a net outflow of what, 2 billion rand. Is that over a year or is it over a longer period of time?
It's about 2 to 5 billion per annum, quite consistently over the last few years. That's net outflow. So we're talking north of 100 billion that's coming into South Africa and about 2 to 5 billion more going out of South Africa every year. I think what surprised me most, though, out of this data is the love for stable coins. So as I said, we reached a peak of around 500 billion rands in trading activity, half a trillion rand, in 2021. And since then, our crypto activity has kind of plateaued. But something that has risen heavily out of the ashes is South Africa's love for stable coins. We're seeing actually that currently USDT and USDC trading volumes have caught up with Bitcoin and is now equal to Bitcoin. There's as much appetite for South Africans to engage in crypto trading or in stablecoin trading than there is in Bitcoin trading. So that is something very, very, very interesting. And you've got to, have to ask yourself the question, why is that the case? Because you could argue that there's a real demand for South Africans to hold some Bitcoin because it provides them with all kinds of benefits and it's highly volatile and it goes up by several percentages per year on average, etc. Right? And there's speculation drives all of that activity. But that's not the case with stablecoins. There is no speculative aspect to stablecoins. In fact, there's only risk. So you got to ask yourself, why is there such a huge appetite for that? And that, to me, all points to utility. We're seeing South African CASPs booming. We have 250-plus CASPs, crypto asset service providers, registered with the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. And we're seeing such a lot of innovation there. Tokenized assets, we're seeing Web3 applications, even the banks are heavily, heavily active in that. We're seeing stable, like payments, and we're seeing remittances. So we're seeing such a lot of utility being built into this asset class now, lately. And I think that's what's driving the stablecoins, because the only reason why you would buy a stablecoin is if you're going to use it for something, right?
All right, now, how does LedgerCore, this is the engine, the intelligence engine that you're using to monitor all this data, how does it actually see the market without invading privacy? And you mentioned that you've been able to de-anonymize, in other words, put names next to wallet addresses. How have you been able to do that and answer that question about privacy?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So I think, you know, one thing that if you do transact with a cryptocurrency, and you do transact on-chain, you got to know that you're not private. I think every crypto user in South Africa has to realize this. It's a big, big, big misnomer out there that people believe that they are actually private and anonymized when they transact with crypto. It is the exact opposite. It is like you're writing your transaction on a big billboard on a highway, and everyone in the world can see that you've transacted, right? So not necessarily when you buy and sell Bitcoin, but remember, the exchange knows that. They have your KYC documents, they have your ID documents, all of that, right? So if you do an on-chain transaction, everyone in the world knows it. And what we do is we don't have any special arrangement with any entity or anything like that, or any commercial interest in doing that. All we do is we take public data that's been written and that's viewable to anyone in the entire world, and we process that in a very unique way. So there is no privacy, first of all, in crypto. It doesn't exist. And the fact is that records never, ever get destroyed. Like, it's not like you do a bank transaction today, you know, you think that maybe, you know, at least this record will be destroyed in 5 years, because I think according to law, there's some sort of a period after which, you know, all records is destroyed, financial records, I think so. But in Bitcoin and in crypto, it doesn't work like that. We can go back, and even if we don't understand the transaction that's happening today, we might not know who the sender is and we might not know who the receiver is. With time, we only get smarter and smarter. And with time, we only accumulate more and more information. And even if we don't know it today, we'll definitely know it in 5 or 10 years from today. So you got to know that, and you got to realize that, and you've got to be conscious when you're doing that as a crypto user. All right. So be careful. And with that, I crunch on-chain data for a living. I look at this stuff every single day, and I study it intensely. There's a few things that I can provide as helpful tips to crypto users across South Africa and across the world. And that's like, you know, helpful, I think, things that, are just very, very good habits in order to protect your privacy, at least to some degree. So maybe I can get into that quickly. So like a few things is like, first of all, when you do have a wallet, right? Let's say you have a hardware wallet, you have a wallet on your phone, you downloaded an app, you like, you know, going now, you're becoming self-sovereign, you're going to withdraw your Bitcoin from on-chain, from an exchange, and you're going to keep it in your hardware wallet because that's the right thing to do. You want to be self-sovereign, you want to own that currency. And now you do several withdrawals from the exchanges over an extended period. The thing is, the first time you're going to transact with that wallet, whether it's on your phone or on your hardware wallet, that wallet, the software is configured by default to accumulate all of those withdrawals that you've done to the exchanges into one single transaction and then pay whoever you are paying after that. It might get a little bit technical here, but I'll try to simplify it, right? It's like taking a wallet. Let's say you have your wallet and you have 500 Rand notes inside your wallet, right? But they're all coming from different sources. So like no one really knows who those 100 Rand notes belong to. It's kind of how it works on the blockchain. But now you're going to buy something of 500 Rand. So you're taking the 500 Rand, the 500 Rand notes, and you put it down. The moment you do that, we know that that 500 Rand notes all belong to you. So like the technical term for what I'm saying here is mixing your UTXOs. So that's the first tip, is always maintain a clean path between your UTXOs on chains. Never mix your different coins with each other and through a transaction. And the software, the reality is that Bitcoin and wallet software always do this by default. So you've got to be a little bit advanced in order to do that. Secondly, is like, don't think that you can get away. Don't be oblivious to the fact that these things are transparent, right? So, like, if you're going to withdraw coins from an exchange when the coins are 100,000 Rand or whatever the case may be, let's say Bitcoin's 100,000 Rand, now you withdraw it from an exchange, and now it sits in your self-hosted wallet, that transaction is public. Everyone in the world can see that you've withdrawn Bitcoin from Luno or from Valor, or I don't want to mention any specific ones, but from any of these exchanges, right? And now, a year later, Bitcoin's 2 million Rand, and you go and deposit it back into another exchange. It doesn't need to be one of those that you've withdrawn it to. And you deposit it. I mean, that's a clear path. Listen, you've had Bitcoin at the point at which it was 100,000 Rand, and you've had Bitcoin, the same coin, with point at which it was 2 million Rand. Like, so there's clearly a capital gain that you've had. Whether you really bought it at 100 or whether you're really going to sell it at 2 million, that's another question. But remember that you've left a trail, and anyone in the world can go and see that trail and then make some conclusions based on that data. So I'll leave you with those two tips at least. There's a lot more. But but I think, you know, people need to realize that there's nothing hidden. Everything is in plain sight.
I guess this is a question that you must have wrestled with yourself. But, you know, the original ethos of crypto was that you would have this degree of anonymity and you'd be able to avoid eyes from the regulators. But what you're talking about, you know, is that not anti-crypto or is it pro-transparency? How would you describe it?
So I think you are 100% correct. And I think that there's a few things to be said there. First of all, it is that without data and without making crypto look like financial data, it will always just stay like a little bit of a niche backyard project, like a garage project. Okay. So I think that the work that we're doing is we're taking crypto data and we're turning it into financial data so that the big guns, Wall Street and the banks and the ETFs and the JSD and the NASDAQ listed companies can get comfortable with it and that they can come and deploy their very trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars into this asset class. If that layer is as messy as it is now, that connection between hardcore raw crypto and the regulated financial system, if that connection is not made, we can forget about them coming in. So first of all, that is highly, highly, highly necessary. That's where we operate. We are a startup, right? We saw an opportunity and we're going after it extremely, extremely fast and aggressively. Like that's what startups are all about. We're a bunch of engineers at Sixpence. We like crunching data. We love crypto. That's our history. We've been in crypto since the very beginning, just like a lot of other people. And we saw an opportunity, and that's the opportunity that we're trying to close. Now, your question of whether that's anti-crypto or not, I think it comes back to the realization that there's nothing that you can do, and any crypto holder can do, to change the fact that everything that they do, every transaction, is in the public already. And it is upon us to know that, to realize that, and to operate accordingly, and to make sure that our on-chain footprint, the footprint that we leave for the entire world, is clean, and that we do everything we can to maintain privacy in a world that is definitely, definitely not private at all. Right. So I think that's where I'll go. Where I'll leave that. Yeah.
I think the analogy there is like, imagine having your bank account and every transaction on your bank account put on a public ledger. You know, everything that you've done, that's pretty much what the blockchain is doing. And you're just taking that data and making it more useful. But I guess the question, follow-on question from that is, might have answered this one. Does it make having access to this much data and being able to process it, does it make the crypto space safer by having all of this data?
That's for sure the case. I mean, apart from just crunching the data and giving you some high-level macro insights into how South Africa is adopting crypto and which asset classes are now preferred, and I mean, all of that's very, very interesting. But a side which we haven't even touched yet is us recognizing things like scams and theft and other types of highly, highly illicit activity, which we take that data as well. And we work with law enforcement and the regulators around South Africa in order to catch those guys. I mean, crypto is notoriously unsafe and it's a bit of a wild west. As much as I love that, it's also incredibly sad. Look, my inbox is full of people that have lost crypto through theft. Kieran, you and I have spoken about it at length in the past, about the stuff that we see there. It's very, very scary. Some of my friends, some of my family, people have lost everything. So I also feel like it is our duty to use this extensive data set to the best of our ability to catch those guys and to make the crypto industry safer for all. I mean, I think no one can argue that we don't want that stuff. It is just ugly. It is just sad. As much as we love crypto, that is really the ugly side of it, and it's the side that does not belong in our industry. And luckily, for the fact that we have all of this data, we can do something about it.
Yeah. Just talk about that. How do you zero in on what is a criminal transaction? Because all you're seeing is a blizzard of, you know, digits moving across, you know, blockchain. How do you know, do you first of all need somebody to lodge a complaint? Hey, I think I've been ripped off here, and you know, and went from this address, and you can then track it to the address it went. How does that work?
So there's a few ways it can work. That's one which you just described is very common. So someone would contact us saying, "Listen, someone just stole my money. I just said it. I thought it's some sort of an investment scheme or whatever the case may be. I realized that this guy is just running away. Whatever he said is untrue. So now I've lost my Bitcoin. Here's all my transactional history. I mean, you know, we usually get like screenshots from Luno and screenshots from Valor and whatever these exchanges, because it usually flows directly from there. And then we take that and we just launch an investigation. A couple of hours later, we have insights. We know where that coins are. And then we can work with law enforcement and to try and recover those coins to some extent. Most of the time, it's very difficult. The scammers are fast, and you got to act fast within hours or minutes. But we have had a couple of success cases. I'm proud to say that as well. We did manage to recover those assets. In other cases, we just know the identities, right? So it's not like someone have contacted us yet, but we know we for instance, monitor the sanction lists. So we know exactly which addresses are sanctioned across the world. That's a big source of it. And we rely on other open source intelligence, other people that have identified scams and so on. And we have automatic crawlers that just crawls the entire web, social media, etc. And we know Whenever there's a sniff of something that might be an illicit activity, then we will already know about it. We already attach a risk to that address or that activity. And then if we see any South African activity that's starting to engage with that, you know, a Luna withdrawal or a Valor withdrawal or one of the other exchanges in South Africa interacting with those dodgy services, then we'll know about it and we'll be able to take action or alert the regulators or whatever the case may be.
It sounds like what you're doing is quite similar to what Chainalysis does. Maybe they're the biggest blockchain analytics firm in the world. Maybe you can just touch on that. But I'm also curious to find out who would be your clients. And specifically, you've mentioned banks getting involved in this, wanting to understand blockchain, wanting to feel comfortable with it, but law enforcement and regulators as well. So who are your clients?
The way we are different to Chainalysis is Chainalysis is heavily, heavily focused on this very, very one key niche, which is investigations and monitoring for illicit activity and so on. Our database and our data is much more diverse than that. So monitoring for criminal activity is one thing that we do, but we also do a whole bunch of other things because our data set is extremely diverse. So we build dashboards and being able to monitor the industry, the macro industry, like I said to you now, like we know cross-border flows, for example, and things like that. We have index pricing. We monitor suspicious activity on exchanges themselves, like price manipulation and order book manipulation, that kind of stuff. We do proof of reserves and accounting. So our client base is much broader than that. We serve JSE-listed companies that have engaged in Bitcoin treasury acquisitions and things like that, and we built all kind of sophisticated insights for them on the market. So our market really stretches from auditors and accountants to regulators to some a little bit of exchanges, but not so much exchanges yet.
I want to touch on one thing there. You mentioned market manipulation. Every exchange is basically running its own market. It's got its own liquidity. It's got its own price discovery. I would imagine that the exchanges are themselves looking for evidence of market manipulation. But you're kind of a third set of eyes in this. Is that right? And if you find something, do you then notify the exchange?
So we don't have those agreements with the exchanges yet. We're still talking with them and negotiating with them. I think in South Africa, the uptake is a little bit slower because market surveillance is not explicitly required by law in South Africa yet. It is in the US, by the way. So every exchange operating in the US is supposed to surveil the market and supposed to do all of these detections and so on. In South Africa, our legal landscape around the industry and the regulations is very much still developing. We've done a few good things, but there's a lot more work to be done. And that one being one of them as well. Monitoring for any suspicious activity. Our toolset is developed. It's ready. It's able to assist the exchanges and the regulators in that sense as already as well. We are marketing it globally. So hopefully one day we'll see it plugged in.
So you're going global, and are you getting global clients?
We have a few clients in the US. We're focusing heavily on marketing in the US currently. So auditing clients in the US and as well as in Europe. I can't disclose too much on the names, but we're after some really, really, really big names in Wall Street, some very tall towers there. And then a lot in South Africa. I mean, I think every regulator and every crypto company in South Africa knows about us by now, and every auditor. So those are our main partners at this point. And then we're building a couple of B2C products as well, which I'd like to encourage the public, you know, the normal retail users to also keep an eye out for. We're building a few insightful products inside South Africa as well as a B2C model. Which we'll make public and launch soon. And soon, by soon, I mean maybe around beginning December, if everything goes well.
Well, we look forward to checking back in with you. It sounds like a great South African success story. Wish you all the best with that in your international expansion as well. Thank you very much, Karel de Jager, who's co-founder of Silver Sixpence and, I guess, key developer of LedgerCorp, which we've been talking about.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.